So, what do I want to tell you? Yeah, so this is a continuation, except that like I don't really remember what I said last time, so you don't have to either.
That's good. Yeah, I wasn't.
So I might have last time said the following. I might have given the following definition. So, dioperid. I'll actually unpack it a little bit now. So the sort of slogan definition that I might have given was that there's something that people care a lot about, which is about operads. And operads have to do with there's something that you build out of rooted trees. Somehow the definition of operad, which I will actually tell you a little bit maybe, to know what you have to know is about rooted trees, and that's the input you need. So operads divided by rooted trees, the value added to go from rooted trees to operads, the ratio there, is you could do other things. For instance, you could do directed trees. And the construction that takes in rooted trees and produces operads takes in directed trees and produces something called dioperad. This is a definition of the word dioperad. So let me say that a little bit more unpacked, because I don't know if you even know what an operad is, so I'll just tell you what a dioperad is. And I should probably say that everything I'm doing is over a field of characteristic zero. Well, it doesn't really matter yet. So specifically, a dioperad is it's a sequence of vector spaces. I will work in it. You could do this over in any kind of reasonable world. I think for the examples I want to give, I'm going to work in I want to do DG stuff. So everything is going to be DG and over a field of characteristic zero, which won't matter yet, but will eventually for something I want to say. So a dioperad is a sequence of vector spaces, a bisequence of vector spaces. I'll call it P, is a bunch of vector spaces, actually, well, chain complexes, DG vector spaces. I'll call them PMN. And PMN is the space usually, this is going to be the space of M to N operations. So it's a bunch of vector spaces and various data on the vector spaces. So there's sort of two main types of data. The first thing is that the vector spaces shouldn't just be vector spaces, but they should have actions of symmetric groups. So PMN is a symmetric group M SN bimodule. So if you have an operation with M inputs and N outputs, the point is you could rearrange the inputs. So I should tell you how to do that. And then the other thing, the most important part, is that if you draw any rooted tree, there's compositions parameterized by rooted trees, not rooted, directed trees. So a typical example is if I draw, so for example, if I draw some picture, some directed tree, so I might draw a tree that has, say, a node and three inputs here and two inputs here and another node and so I might draw a picture like that. And this is a picture, this And I might even by hand put in some symmetric group action, for instance. So my trees aren't necessarily planar. The symmetric group lets me kind of, I'll think of as letting me cross edges around. So there's some picture. So this is, so this picture gives gives a composition map. This is a picture of a composition map from P, let's see. This has three inputs and two outputs. This one has one input and two outputs. This one has three inputs and two outputs. And the whole picture has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 inputs and 1, 2, 3, 4 outputs. And the combinatorics of trees gives you relations between these composition maps. So associativity is the fact that this composition map kind of, so these compositions must be associative. So for instance, you could have factored this composition through, you're allowed to, you know, take subtrees. So you could have factored this composition through a map from P3 to tensored with 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. So there's the associativity that comes from this factorization of that tree. So you can unpack what a dioperet is. I mean, every tree is built out of trees with exactly two vertices and compositions of them. And so it's not bad, you know, just like an associative algebra, I could either tell you that you have kind of infinitely many compositions which factor in some nice way, or I could tell you that there's a binary composition which has an associativity. So that's the definition of dioperet. And it's clear what a representation of a dioperet is. So a representation, a representation of P, which is also called a P algebra. Well, it's a vector space. And actual maps from V to itself, you know, M to N maps, realizing the operations in P. So it's a representation. So another way to say that is that any actual vector space determines that there's a map from vector spaces to dioperets, not a functor, but I mean, I haven't really told you what morph. Anyway, there's a map from vector spaces to dioperets, which takes in a vector space and produces that it's, I'll call the dioperet end of V. And it has the property that the M to N maps an end of V is just by definition Hom in vector spaces from V to the M to V to the N. And so a representation is a representation of P is just a homomorphism from P to end of V. Just what you might think a representation is. So that's what dioperets are, and there's some standard examples. So for instance, there's any operet gives you a dioperet. Just by saying that if you have an operet O, which has, you know, takes operets have many to one operations, you could declare that PMN is OM if N is 1 and 0 if N is not 1 with the standard composition. Another example of, another sort of important example of a diopered, the other two important examples, there's a commutative Frobenius, which is where I give you exactly one operation, just the ground field itself. This K will be the name of my field. With a sort of standard multiplication, with the standard actions on it. And then you can make some adjustments. For instance, there's a Frobenius operad where the operation, so the cohomology of a manifold is not a Frobenius algebra because the, for me, because the co-multiplication has some non-trivial degree. So only if you have to be Frobenius is something that degrees. So there's some version of, I'll call it Frob D, which is sort of Frobenius algebras, commutative Frobenius algebras, where the co-multiplication has degree D. And I'm not going to worry if I mean D or minus D. And this is similar. This is like PMN is K in some degree, depending some function, some degree. Some function of D, and some linear function of some anyway. I don't remember what it is. And then I should make one more technical aside, which is that there's clearly sort of a homotopy. There's a because I'm working in DG world. There's a natural homotopy world you could use. You could declare that a weak equivalence is a homomorphism, which is a quasi-isomorphism, and you can ask kind of can you actually compute in that homotopy theory? Can you build it? Can you make that into a model category? And I just want to make an aside that it doesn't matter. There's some model category theoretic stuff that's easier when you don't allow zero to zero maps. So model category technicalities. You don't need as strong as I'm going to say, but it'll make things easier, which is that I'd like to request that P0M and P0N and PM0 are both 0, and that P11 is just the identity map and nothing else. I mean, any operad will have any dioperad. There's a tree with no vertices and one input and one output, which would evaluate to the identity map. But for the model category theory is easiest when you ask that be the only one. This is overkill, but it'll work for all the examples I want. It's somehow an aside. Oh, I should give you one more example, which is that there's Lebye algebras. There's a diopered called Lebye. Craig, did you do that? Huh, okay. There's a diopered called Lebye algebras, which I'll give a presentation to you for it. It's the diopered, it's generated by a 2-to-1 map and a 1-to-2 map. I'll stop drawing the arrows. All of my arrows are gonna go down. And the relations are, these should be, I'll tell you how the symmetric group acts. They're both anti-symmetric. And there's some relations, which are that if you, there's a Jacobi and co-Jacobi relations. A similar one for the inputs, and there's a five-term relation, which I won't get the signs right on. And all five other, somehow these have names. The S channel is a sum of T and U channels or something like that. I don't remember the signs, but they're forced. Okay. There was one more reason for saying all this, there's one more example that was sort of maybe the point of a lot of what I said last time, which was, I mentioned that at least under some model category theoretic assumptions, at least if you sort of put some model category theoretic assumptions on, you can always resolve a Lie-by algebra by a quasi-free resolution, which will be a cofibrant resolution. And you don't really have to worry too much about what those words mean. Let me say a little bit, which are that under some assumptions, like this is plenty strong enough. This is overkill, but it's good enough. Under some model category theoretic assumptions, if P is quasi-free, so that means that it's free except it's free if you forgot the differential. Free if you forgot the differential. So at least if P is quasi-free, there's a way of moving P algebra structures across quasi-isomorphism of vector spaces. So then the P algebra structures, so HOM from P to NV, will have a natural space structure. And I'm trying to say that if you have a quasi-isomorphism between V and W, then you can build somehow a quasi-isomorphism. If you have two vector spaces which are quasi-isomorphic, then you get something like an equivalence between this. I've only told you this, like that an actual P-algebra is a map from P to NV, but I'm implicitly telling you that there's a notion of homotopy of P-algebra structures. And in the quasi-free case, there's a natural simplicial set that you can write down whose zero cells are the actual morphisms. And that simplicial set only depends on V up to weak equivalences. Kind of as this is an equivalence of simplicial sets. So the zero cells in those simplicial sets are the actual morphisms, and you can work out what the higher cells are. And that's sort of somehow standard nonsense of model categories that I won't get too much into. The point is that the way you do this is that if P is quasi-free and you have an algebra structure on it, then you take each generator, and well, this condition means that like this condition is there so that the derivative that you can order the generators by their how many inputs and how many outputs they have, and this condition forces that the derivative of a generator will be a composition of generators earlier in the ordering. So then what you do is you go through in order of all the generators. Each generator, maybe you know how it acts in NV, so you just move that action via your quasi-isomorphism to an action on W. That you move, there were some choices that you made on how you moved it, but whatever. And then and you show that that kind of works systematically. So the point is that the reason I say this is to say that then in particular quasi-free diopereds are a good homotopy coherent notion. So I can talk about a homotopy algebra. So I should also say that also also the space of homotopy algebras for P is the same as the space of homotopy algebras for Q if P is quasi-isomorphic to Q and both are quasi-free. So then the definition is that a homotopy P, that say a homotopy, I'll say it in the case of Lie-by algebras, is an algebra for any quasi-free resolution of the Levi algebra dioperad. And that notion doesn't depend on the details of how you did the quasi-free resolution. That's somehow all part of general model category stuff. And for example, there's a good Levi algebra. So this was maybe the point that I got to at the end of last time. For example, there's a Levi algebra. There's a quasi-free Levi algebra, which is there. You can look at the Levi algebra with the quasi-free Levi algebra. Sorry, quasi-free dioperad generated by a single vertex with a single operation in each arity. So the generators, there's, so for each M and N, there's a single generator. And maybe they're both, I should tell you how the symmetric groups act, which I think in this case will be the sine action for both of them. And the derivatives are that the derivative of a generator is a sum over binary trees. So you just take all possible binary trees, and that's the derivative of the generator. And there's some signs and some combinatorial factors that I'm not writing down, because I can't be bothered, and also because there's no good. There's two reasons. I would get them actually wrong, and the other is because there's no right way to do sort of signs and combinatorial factors. Like what I call a generator, you might call seven times a generator or something like that. Okay, so what was the point? This was all a way of summarizing something that, okay. And again, maybe I want to impose my condition that somehow I want to, again, for model category theoretic reasons, would like to request that there be, that all generators have, so I want to rule out these. So I don't want any generators with zero inputs and no generators with zero outputs. And I also don't want any one-to-one generators, because if I had a one-to-one generator, then it would be extra on top of the identity operation. So do that for this guy. And then the point was that, what was the point? The point was that representations of this guy, I don't know why I'm vibrating. So the point is, I'll call it strongly homotopy, semi-strict homotopy Levi algebra, whatever. I'll call it homotopy Levi algebra. And the point is that there is a natural cofibrant resolution to the Levi algebra dioperad. So this is a cofibrant resolution. And but the other point was that homotopy Levi algebras are, well, we sort of arrived at this dioperad last time by asking kind of what should a homotopy Poisson structure be. And so these were something like Poisson infinitesimal manifolds. And then this model theoretic condition said that they were pointed Poisson infinitesimal manifolds. So the Poisson structure and the cohomological vector field vanish at the origin, vanish at the point. Okay, that was a summary of last time, and I've already used half my time, so now I have to get to the point of today. So the point.
Would it be obvious why this gives me the Jacobi relation if I stare at it?
No, but you should do it as an exercise, or I think I have my lecture last time was videotaped. Okay. Yeah, I mean, so okay, so the exercise for Benji is to actually construct the quasi-isomorphism. And well, actually, proving it's a quasi-isomorphism is a little hard. Constructing a surjection is not too bad. Showing it's a quasi-isomorphism is a somewhat complicated thing. There's the best proof is in two steps. The first thing is to do it for just Lie algebras as opposed to Lie bi-algebras. And the second step is to prove some general statement that lets you, if you know that you have quasi-free resolutions of an operad and an operad set sort of stood on its head, then to figure out how to build a quasi-free resolution of some sort of combination of those, and to show that that will cover this case. So that second step I think is due to Bruno Valette. And the first step is somehow known and ends up getting involved with the combinatorics of Lindenwurz. So it's not a trivial thing.
What was the name you said for that second step?
Bruno Valette.
Oh, Valette, right.
So what I want to tell you about is not actually things that have algebras which are just vector spaces. What I want to tell you about is, so dioperads act on vector spaces. They give you many-to-many maps of vector spaces on a single vector space. What I want to do is tell you about things with many-to-many maps between a pair of vector spaces. So I want to tell you about something I call an arrowed dioperad. And the point is that an arrowed dioperad should be so dioperads act on vector spaces. Arrowed dioperads act on morphisms of vector spaces. And I'll even think I will try to be systematic with my use of colors. So they act on things that look like a vector space, a morphism, and then another vector space. So so an arrowed dioperad is a bunch of things. I won't write it in kind of coherent sentences. So what I should do is I should tell you to tell you a many-to-many map on a pair of vector spaces with an arrow between them. Well, what are the things I should tell you? I should tell you sort of how many blue ins I have, how many red ins I have. I should also tell you how many blue outs I have and how many red outs I have. So it's a bunch of vector spaces parameterized by four tuples of numbers. There should be a distinguished element namely the arrow itself that lives in the space of one blue input, no red inputs, no blue outputs, and one red output. And then there should be compositions parameterized by bicolored, two-colored two-colored trees, directed trees. So the whole thing goes through. There's still, again, like a nice model category of these. The technical conditions, kind of sufficient but a bit overkill technical conditions are that the no, you know, maybe I don't want to allow sort of disallow kind of having no inputs at all or no outs at all. That's certainly nice if you're building a model, if you're actually building the model category. And also, like before, I sort of, it was convenient to say that the identity was the only one-to-one map. Now I should say that the only one-to-one maps are the identity on red, the identity on blue, and the morphism itself. The distinguished map. So those are sort of conveniences that you can try to avoid, but they include all of my examples. And typical examples are that if you take any, you know, if you have an ordinary operad, if you have, say, an operad or a dioperad, then you could try to write down the notion of a homomorphism of p-algebras. And you can parameterize it by an arrowed object. That maybe I'll call it P arrow, for instance, such that P arrow algebras are morphisms of P algebras. You could unpack that. This is a somewhat complicated thing because I don't know. Let me just say in general, there's some big question, which is even if P is quasi-free, P arrow isn't in, we don't have good formulas for its cofibrin resolution, for quasi-free resolutions, unfortunately. So, I mean, there's bad formulas for cofibrin resolution that work in all cases. But in particular, I'm saying that even if you have a Kozul, even if you have a Kozul operad, Kozul, let me just make an aside. There's a definition. This is a seminar called Kozul Duality. I have no idea if you guys defined Kozul Duality or not. So in at least in some old-fashioned literature, maybe still today, a definition of Kozul. A mathematical object is called Kozul. Is Kozul if there is a good formula. For its quasi-free resolution. I'm pretty sure that if you look in any paper that defines the word Kozul, it'll boil down to this. So what I'm telling you is I'm telling you that even if you have a Kozul operad, the arrowed operad that parameterizes morphisms, I don't know why it would be Kozul. And I think it's not. But that's not the one I want to tell you about. I'm going to sort of the construction I really want to tell you is the following.
Or can I just add, yeah. So that statement is supposed to mean like there's always something you can do called bar cobar, and that only ends up being a quasi-free resolution if you were Kozul.
No, that's not what I'm telling you. I'm telling you, there's always something you can do called bar cobar. And that construction always works under mild conditions, like this technical condition that I've erased is plenty strong enough for that to always give you a quasi-free resolution. But it tends to be way too big. So in particular, kind of what happened? Well, you took the bar complex, that already has a differential. And then you take cobar of that, and now you have two differentials. One of which isn't that interesting. I mean, and they got all, and so it's like, so Anyway, that's sort of an evidence that it was too big. So what you'd really like is something like write down a quasi-free resolution in which...
maybe say the word minimal.
Yeah, what you'd like is like to be able to have access to minimal quasi-free resolutions and have good formulas for those.
Infinity on that.
Right.
It's a very small number of generators.
That's right. And also this one, like what's secretly going on is the notion of Lie algebra, that diopered is COSOL, and this is its minimal resolution. And so one of the definitions you'll read in the literature of COSOL is that something like is a very specific one that says that, well, it's a quadratic object such that when you take bar, or maybe cobar, of the quadratic dual, then you get a quasi-free resolution, which is to say that the quadratic and bar duals are the same, or are quasi-isomorphic. And that in general is a good, I mean, there's other people who've generalized the notion, but. Yes, so the construction I want to tell you is not really about morphisms. So as far as I can tell, homomorphisms of algebras are not very good. Because, for instance, even if I knew that an operad was COSOL, I don't know that it's that the two-colored operad parameterizing morphisms is COSOL. So the thing that I want to tell you is that morphisms are not so. So the point is, morphisms are a perfectly kind of coherent notion, but they're not easy to compute with, because we don't have good formulas for the homotopy theory of morphisms. So here's a better construction. I'll just tell it to you out of the box. Just sort of out of thin air. And then I'll tell you the statement about it. So let's say that P is a diopered. Let P be a diopered. I'll define for you a colored an arrow diopered. I'll define an arrow diopered that I'll call P triangle. And it will be the following. P triangle, the rule is the following. There's an arrow diopered with the following definition. So the space of you can all see colors, so I'll just not even write subscripts. I'll just use colors. The space of M to N map. Well, anyway, what was my notation? V was first. Yeah. Anyway, M1 to N2 maps. The vector space of maps of two colors, my definition for you is going to be that it's the following. It's the it's just P of M1 plus M2. You just ignore the colors, except for one case. So the only time that you don't ignore the colors is that if all of the inputs are red and all of the outputs are blue. So if all of the inputs are red and all of the outputs are blue, meaning there are no blue inputs and no red outputs, then you put the zero vector space. And in all other cases, you just ignore the color. So that defines a colored, an arrow diopered composition is just ignore the color. And I should convince you that you somehow never try to compose and end up in a case with no red inputs and, sorry, no blue inputs and no red outputs, or whichever it is. You never end up in, like, if you, so there's some easy lemma that says that if you have a composition of things, none of which are in the verboten case, then the composition's also not verboten. And that lemma actually requires that I'm working with trees. It doesn't work at graph level. So that's the first place that I'm using that I'm working with trees. So there's a thing. So I'll just do some examples for you so you can see how this looks. What's your favorite, Kevin, associatively or commutative? Associative, okay. So let's say that P is the associative operator. So what is the associative operator? It has one generator and one relation. Well, there's a non-unital associative operator with one generator and one relation. And if you want, there's also a unital one with, I'll even mention the unital case, which is sort of not included in my kind of technical conditions, but you could still plug it into this construction. And then the relation, that extra relation is that it's unital, of course. So then what does P triangle look like? Well, we can start listing some elements in P triangle. Well, what are some of the things you could do? Oh, by the way, before I continue, notice that there is there's an identity element in P11, which will correspond to the pointing, the distinguished vector in, let's say, the only one-to-one space with no, let's see, I have to have at least one blue input. This is pink. That's not red. So the distinguished vector corresponds, the distinguished morphism corresponds to the identity in this construction. Anyway, so what are the types of things that you see in Piero? So some typical elements are, for example, there's a map that has all of the inputs. Let's see, you can't have all the inputs be red, but you could have one of the inputs be blue and one of the inputs be red, for instance. And then the output could be anything. So you're allowed to do one of these, just not, like, you're allowed for one of M or N to vanish, just not both of them. So the output could be, for instance, blue. There's a typical element in here. So I'm just going to list some typical elements. There's another element, which is that when you have a blue input and a red input and a red output, but that's just equal to the composition of the first one I had and this distinguished morphism. Just because if I ignored the colors, they'd be equal. And similarly, if I had two, let's say I'm not allowed to have two red inputs and two and a blue output. So disallowed, somehow it's easier to list the disallowed ones. So the disallowed, the verboten colorings are two red inputs and one blue output. That was the only disallowed one. And if I have a unit that already has no inputs at all, so it has to have a red output. So that's disallowed. So those are somehow not part of P triangle. But all the other colorings are. So there's, for instance, a blue blue with a red action. If you wanted to do blue blue blue, for instance, well, that would be the same as doing blue blue red and then doing the distinguished map. But it's also the same as doing blue, blue, red on this side and the distinguished map.
Is all this the same as an algebra with the subalgebra?
Great, no.
Yeah.
This is not an algebra with a subalgebra. That would be a homomorphism of algebras. So the point is that notice I have this element. So I have a map from, remember my map is from blue to red. So I have an algebra. So for instance, so P triangle kind of, it contains a copy of entirely blue P, except for maybe a non-unital version. So it contains non-unital associative in blue. It contains a full copy of the associative in red. Every map in the associative operet has at least one output, so that output, as long as it's red, is allowed. And it contains various things that mix blue and red, always with at least one, you know, it does not have a two reds to a blue, but it does have a blue red to blue.
Those all seem to
give an element, so. Yeah, that's right. So the punchline of what I was saying is that look, I have a non-unital subalgebra in blue, but I also have a map from red to a way that red can act on blue. And then you can look at the associator relations, and there are some colorings, like if you took, you know, if you looked at all possible colorings of this, you'd find that one of the possible colorings of associativity says that that this is an action from the right of red on blue. So what's the point? The point is I have an algebra in red. So the point is that an algebra is, well, it's an associative algebra, maybe unital algebra in red, a non-unital subalgebra in blue, and an action, which is actually an action an action from either side. So there's also a map where red acts on the other side. So that blue, exactly, is red bimodule for red. So this much says that it's a sub bimodule, and then finally the blue action is actually just given by the red, sort of the composition of the red action. And the end result, as Yehav says, is that this is exactly blue as an ideal, a bi-ideal in the red algebra. So that's why I use the triangle sign. Is that I've exactly told you what ideals are. Well, except I didn't tell you ever that the map had to be an inclusion. So the point is that this is a version of ideals. These, if you knew that the distinguished map from blue to red was an inclusion, then I'd be exactly giving you ideals. Instead, I'm giving you some version of ideals that doesn't need inclusions. And that's because in homotopy theory, there's no good way to say what an inclusion is. And the point is that if you knew that it was an inclusion, it becomes really clear when you look at commutative that there's something that this is the right thing to do. But anyway, that's why I want you to think of this as like parameterizing P ideals. And you can unpack a bunch of examples. So the point is that this, so in summary, this parameterizes P triangle algebras are like P ideals. So let me mention a couple results about this. So on the one hand, if you just unpack in examples, this just is true. Like all things that you would ever call an ideal, or maybe a co-ideal. Like it was an ideal in the case when P was an operet. If you did this when P was an operet stood on its head, which is not the same as a co-operet. It needs another name. So like anyway, if you did the case where P was an operet stood on its head, meaning it had the only things were one input and many outputs, then a p-triangle algebra would be like a co-ideal rather than an ideal. So for bi-algebras, this is neither ideal. This is some mix of ideal and co-ideal. So a few nice facts are that some theorems, first of all, if P is Kozul, so is P triangle. And in fact, the formulas are pretty straightforward. So what I'm telling you is, I'm telling you that if you have a so in particular, for instance, you know what an A-infinity algebra is, and it's not so. There's some version. So I told you like what a sort of strict ideal was. If you know what an A-infinity algebra is, and from the recipe, from the rules from the presentation of the A-infinity operette. I'm not going to tell it to you because I don't remember it off the top of my head, but there's a way of writing down a quasi-free resolution of kind of of ideal for A infinity. It's really systematic. There's some other effects. Kevin mentioned this looks a lot like an algebra structure on the direct sum, and that's almost correct. So if kind of V to W is a p-triangle algebra, the statement is that not the direct sum, but rather the cone. So that's the direct sum up to some degree shift. And the cone of f, so remember that's up to some degree shift. It's like v plus w shifted, or maybe it's w plus v shifted. And I don't remember whether the conventions are 1 or minus with some differential. Well, it's also not a p-algebra, but it's a p-algebra up to some degree shift. It's like a p-tensored with frob of some degree algebra, at least up to homotopy. Which is not obvious from the way I said it, but it's a fun I was very pleased with the calculation. So I promised this would be about 5 minutes, which is, I think, just the right amount of time. Oh, and there's one more theorem. Which is that if P is an operette, not in general, but the operette case, then the P algebra structures, the P triangle algebra structures on an arrow from V to W, this category, this is maybe the main point. So here I'm going to prove it really does mean ideal. Well, if you have a map from V to W, you can take the cone on that morphism, and W includes into the cone. So maybe my convention is the cone should be on this set. I don't know. So then you can look at the inclusion from W to the cone on F. And I drew it that way just because it fits into an exact triangle. And you can look at morphisms of p-algebra. I told you that if p is an operette, then a p-triangle structure on the map from V to W in particular gives you a p-algebra structure on W, because p is an operette, so it always has one output. So as long as that output's W, you're fine. And I told you the cone was a p-algebra. And so you can look at kind of p-arrow algebras structures on the map from W to the cone on F. And these are the same as these are equivalent spaces. So what I'm telling you is, I'm telling you I really did tell you what ideal meant. Whatever ideal is, the fundamental definition of ideal is it should be the thing right before a morphism in an exact triangle. At least for algebras of an operette. And so this is the theorem that says that I did tell you what ideal was. And so, in some sense, I mean, this guy doesn't have a good presentation. This guy does, in the case when P is Kozul. And so this isn't actually, I mean, this still doesn't give you a good presentation. I haven't really told you a nice way to think about actual morphisms, except as like cones on ideals. But at least ideals have good presentation. OK, so what's the point? So let me look at the case of Levi algebra. So what are Levi algebras? Well, what do you have? You have, so how do you unpack this into, so why did I care about this? The point was the following. The point was the following. The point was up to homotopy, we said Levi algebras corresponded to Poisson manifolds, infinitesimal pointed. Well, what is a coisotropic in a Poisson manifold? So what I want to claim, I want to convince you, that LB triangle algebras correspond to coisos in a slightly complicated way. So the specific thing is the following. What would a coisotropic in a Poisson be? So if Z is Poisson, and if you ask a Poisson geometry textbook what a coisotropic means, well, then a coisotropic should be, well, it should be a map from Y to Z, a map of manifolds, and a submanifold. Well, remember that Lie algebras, maybe it was Lie coalgebras. Maybe it's Lie algebras, correspond to manifolds in this equivalence. Yeah. Lie algebras correspond to manifolds. So this should be a map of manifolds, a morphism, a HOM of Lie algebras. And we're about to lose the room. Shoot. But also, when you unpack it, you get something about the vanishing ideal of Y being a Lie ideal. Ideal of Y is a Lie ideal in O of Z. That's what a Poisson geometry textbook might tell you. And when you unpack that, what you find out, that after unpacking, you find out that actually the map to the cone, if you have an exact triangle, this should be a map of Lie coalgebras. And so the punchline is that sort of a map from X to Y, well, it should be an ideal because it should come before a map of Lie algebras, and it should be a co-ideal because it should come after a map of Lie coalgebras. And so this is exactly getting what a coisotropic is. And I'm losing the room, so let me just end by saying the following, which is I'll just tell you the IKZ construction at this level, and then won't be able to unpack it. I know, can I have 1 minute?
Yeah.
Which is that if M is an oriented manifold, with boundary, then what can you do? You can look at the cohomology, the Durham complex of M. So you can look at the Durham complex of the boundary. You already know that that's a Frobenius algebra. That was one of the things I told you last time. This is Frobenius of some degree. Let's say this is a D manifold of degree D minus 1. Maybe plus and minus are getting mixed up for me. You can look at the Durham complex of M, which restricts to the boundary. And you can look at the Durham complex with sort of compact support, the Durham complex of M relative to the boundary. So the forms on M that vanish at the boundary. And that forms an exact triangle. And the statement is that this arrow is a homotopy Frob triangle algebra in a canonical way. Quasi-local way. And the end of the construction of AKSZ with boundary for me is if you have a coisotropic in this sense, and you have a manifold like this, then there's a way of packaging them together to get the total mapping space. So I'm over time, so I'm going to stop.